welcome to the In Session Film Podcast for April 14th, 2013. This is episode 8, and I'm J.D. Duran.
I'm Matthew Mason.
Nate Parsons.
We are going to have a fun show on the docket for today. We are going to be reviewing the movie 42, which we got to see over the weekend, and we are going to be going over our, we got a new top list this week. We're going to be doing our top three best sports movies ever, which should be a lot of fun. And then we're going to be doing a new series, or a new segment, excuse me, called the In Session Film Series. And we're going to be going over different directors, actors, composers, genres, or different things like that, and doing a 3 to 4 week series based on whatever topic we decide. And since the great Gatsby is going to be coming out in about a month or so, we're going to do a series on Baz Luhrmann, so which should be a lot of fun. We're not 100% familiar with him, so this is a series for us to get familiar with him as a director, and we're going to be going over his 1991 film.
I believe it's actually 1992.
92, Strictly Ballroom. So and then we'll be finishing off the show with some news and movies we've seen as usual. So before we get going, how was your guys' week?
Pretty good. Light on the movie viewing for me this week, but I am excited to talk about the ones that I didn't see.
Yeah, light with me too. I only saw like two.
Well, obviously I saw a lot more than that as usual, but we'll get to that at the end. Although, before we get started, one quick note was, I went back and listened to last week's show, man, I really loved our picks for the underdogs that we did last week, and I was especially looking at your guys' list, and I really loved them quite a bit. I thought the actors and composers that we picked, I thought was really well done. In fact, I was listening to some music this week by Clint Mansell.
Nice.
That you mentioned last week, and he had some fun stuff that that I really enjoyed. So we went and saw the movie 42 last week, which was written and directed by Brian Helgeland, and stars Chadwick Boseman as Jackie Robinson, and Harrison Ford also plays the Brooklyn Dodgers owner, Branch Rickey. And what did you guys think about 42?
One of the biggest problems with it is that Jackie Robinson's character, rather than being a character, becomes more of a plot device in the film. He's just there to further the story along, and there's no emotional connection with the character. There's no anything that actually makes you want to root for this guy, pull for this guy, cry for this guy, or anything. Instead, it's, oh, hey, we're just telling the story because this is an epic sports story and we want to tell it. Actually, I got a lot more emotion out of the characters, a lot of the side characters, but like Christopher Maloney, I believe, and Harrison Ford as the manager. Like, those are the performances that actually felt like characters to me, and actually kind of, I think, heightened the film as opposed to you know, the portrayal of Jackie Robinson, which was just there to tell a story without actually creating any depth of character.
Yeah, this is really more about the owner, Branch Rickey, Harrison Ford's character. I mean, that's really kind of what they focused on. And he gives the most, you know, his performance has the most depth and has probably the most screen time. And, yeah, Jackie Robinson, they really didn't focus a whole lot on him. And like you said, there weren't really a whole lot of emotional scenes involving him, other than when he finally kind of melts down, breaks down, and he goes down to the clubhouse and, you know, shatters the bat and stuff.
I guess my question actually overall would be, is it Chadwick Boseman's fault as a performance or the way it was written? Because I actually think he gave a good performance, and I think the blame goes more to Brian Helgeland as a writer, that he just didn't write this character well enough.
Yeah, and that's what Nate and I were discussing actually right before the podcast started. We thought as a on a performance level, he did fine. I think he did a good job as Jackie Robinson. This is, to me, all a written script thing in a direction in terms of how this wasn't really well put together. And, I mean, I had a lot to say about this movie. I think it was probably the longest review I've written on the website so far. But, I mean, I think you guys have nailed it pretty much right on the head so far. I mean, this movie, it starts out, like the opening scene starts out with Harrison Ford's character, and that's pretty much the main focal point. And to a certain degree, I guess I kind of like it that it is about him to a certain degree, because without Branch Rickey, there is no Jackie Robinson, right? Like, he's the one that gives him the opportunity to go and make history. And Jackie Robinson goes out, plays the game, and does well, and, you know, and he achieves all of that. But it starts with Branch Rickey. So I kind of like that. But I think at a certain point, though, the story has to be about Jackie Robinson. This movie is supposed to be about him. And like you said, Nate, this movie is more about Branch Rickey. Like, he probably gets more screen time. And like you guys said, has the most depth as a character. And I just, I don't know, at some point, I just feel like it. I wish it would have been more directed to be about him. And kind of like what you were saying, Matthew, in order for a biopic to work well, you know, you have to have a central focal point. I feel like that's the reason I liked Lincoln so much, is because they took a specific period of time about a specific issue, and that's what they focused on. With Abraham Lincoln, you could have talked about a million other things, right? But they took a very specific time and a very specific thing, and it worked well. And on top of that, you had great character performances and all that stuff, and you had the comedic scenes and all that, like you see here. But with here, like you were saying, Matthew, it goes all over the place, and it feels like it doesn't know what it's supposed to be. Like, is it supposed to be a comedy, which it feels like at times, or a drama, which it is at times? It just is all over the map.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the kind of my biggest questions too with it, is it didn't feel like a sports movie. It just felt like a very straightforward biopic, that it's like I'm going and getting a history lesson almost more than wanting to see a sports movie. Sports movies are something newer for me. I don't think I watched my first one probably until I was, you know, probably 20 or so. And you know, but I got a great feel for them, and they're actually typically the better ones are really amazing films, can really capture you, get a lot of spirit. This one was kind of like, okay, that's really awesome to know all of this, but there was none of that kind of underlying inspiration or anything like that in this film. It was more just, hey, here's a story, and we wanted to tell it, and yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't inspirational at all. I mean, even like when he signs a contract, and, you know, when they win the pennant at the end, it's like, who cares? It happened.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's such an inspiring thing in real life. The film just did not do a proper job of saying, putting the magnitude that this was in real life, getting us to feel that.
Yeah, I wish they would have done something bigger when he signed the contract. That was such a big deal. And on the screen, I don't even, there may have been two words said in that whole scene, and it lasted maybe 20 seconds. Like, it was, it just wasn't a big focal point of the movie, but yet it was such a huge thing in history, and they could have done a lot more with that, even if they just amped up the score there or something to make it, you know, make you feel the emotion behind it. The other big problem that I had with this movie is, what makes the story of Jackie Robinson so great is because he's the first African-American ball player to play in the major leagues at a time where racism was very high, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the racism in this movie is so lazy and so just, it's so lackluster. Yeah. It's kind of a joke. And it almost feels like through most of the film, people are more on Jackie Robinson's side than they were, you know, on the racism side. And he experienced so much more than what this movie portrays. And it almost kind of makes fun of it to a certain degree, I feel like, because I don't know if it was just the performances of the actors in the movie or what the case is. I mean, I'm not really sure, but until Alan Tudyk's character comes into play, the racism is pretty much non-existent, or it feels very, very soft and lackluster. Alan Tudyk does a really great job of coming in and playing this character of the Philadelphia Phillies manager. And if they would have stuck to more things like that, I think it would have worked out really well. But to me, a great comparison would be the movie Red Tails, if you saw that in January of last year, where the racism in that was, it almost seemed fake. Like, they were trying real hard, but trying not to offend anybody at the same time.
Yeah, the film almost feels pandering at that point, where it's,
yeah.
I mean, albeit it's uncomfortable in a few scenes just with a lot of the language that's being used. But it also does feel like we're keeping our PG-13 rating. We're being safe. We're trying to make money here. We're not actually going to kind of cross those boundaries, which is weird because remember the Titans, I remember us talking about this, like that was to me one of the colorings here for me was I saw that, but remember the Titans accomplished it very well with a PG rating and still got much more of a feeling than 42 is even able to come close to.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. I actually wrote that in my notes for this, of that movie did a way better job of making you feel the tension and the racism, and it was still a PG-13 movie and had that drama in it, where this was just very lackluster. I felt like Brian Helgeland just was trying to sugarcoat it or dance around the topic, but not really addressing it. And I mean, and if you're going to do it, I feel like you got to do it right, especially because that's what makes his story so great, is because he overcomes the racism, overcomes all these people doing these terrible things and saying these horrible things, like you see in Alan Tudyk's character, but without, but outside of that, you don't experience it. And I think that's why you don't feel the emotional inspiration that you're supposed to have at the end. I just feel like if you're going to do it, it could be done a little bit better, and you need to take it into a way where, I mean, for one, the story is all over the map and that doesn't help. But if you're going to do that, you at least need to hit on what makes this story so great. And that is overcoming, you know, these things that people are saying about him and all these horrible things that are happening to him. You know, I think you need to hit the culture part of this a little bit harder. Like what Matthew said in Remember the Titans, they did that perfectly well while it being PG-13. Well, what did you guys think about some of the other actors in this, like with Jackie Robinson's wife or Christopher Maloney and some of the supporting actors?
I think the supporting cast was actually, you know, part of what helped the film, because I did not walk away hating this movie by any means. I certainly saw it as flawed, but not terrible. I loved a lot of the more notable actors in it, just taking on kind of, you know, really, I can't think of the word, but just not recognized roles. You know, they're not looking for awards here and stuff. But like Christopher Maloney, who I mentioned earlier, as the original manager of the team, he was, manager of the team or coach, I guess. I'm not sure. But he was, I thought, really fantastic, actually. I loved, because his character had a lot more depth than just being on the ball field. I mean, of seeing into his personal life and how that kind of carried over into the way he was working with the team. And yet, albeit he was a flawed man, he was still really, really looking for the best in helping the team, which I really loved seeing that. I enjoyed Tudyk's performance because he was kind of horrible, but he did a great job being, you know, really a hateful man. And then I love John C. McKinley as the announcer. I think one of the driest performances he's ever given in his life, but also I think one of the funniest he's ever given.
Yeah, he has some great lines. He's so deadpan too.
And it makes me wonder if that's how the original announcer was, or if that was, you know, a direction thing. I don't know. I thought it was great. Some of the performances I thought were pretty weak. I think mostly outside of the ones you guys just mentioned, I didn't really care for a whole lot of the performances. But I tell you what, though, some of the one-liners in this film, like especially from Harrison Ford's character, were absolutely phenomenal, especially the ones directed toward God, and how he incorporates that into his one-liners was absolutely hysterical and awesome. And some of those really, I think, hit home pretty hard. I mean, with what he was trying to do with that character, I thought he did a phenomenal job with it. And I mean, and outside of Alan Tudyk, I think my favorite was probably Christopher Maloney, like you were saying, Matthew. I liked him as the Dodgers manager, and I felt like he was really only in the movie for a little bit, and I felt like he was really only in it for that one scene, which was probably shot just for the trailer, I felt like. But I thought he did a pretty good job, though, in that role. What did you guys think of Lucas Black, who was in Friday Night Lights? He played the shortstop for the Dodgers. What did you think about him?
Yeah, actually, I was just looking him up right now, and I'm kind of remembering, I know who this guy is. I'd completely forgotten, all the way from back in Sling Blade in 96. Yeah, he's still, I think, quite an impressive, really underrated actor. Who just gets the side parts, and I wish he wouldn't, because I'm just looking at movies on the list that he starred in, Sling Blade, Friday Night Lights, Jarhead, even the third Fast and the Furious, which I'm kind of unfortunately a fan of. But yeah, I thought his performance here was actually quite good and helped heighten the film, as opposed to like Nicole Beharie's performance as Rachel Robinson. It was okay, but it was just the, like, hey, can you give me my paycheck kind of performance of I'm doing this the way it's written and I'm not adding anything to it.
Yeah, speaking of Lucas Black, who plays Pee-wee Reese, I really liked towards the end when he went up to Jackie Robinson, kind of just let him know that he was on his side and he was rooting for him. I thought that was really well done and probably one of the better moments of the whole movie.
Yeah, it was actually emotional in that scene, which was kind of a rare thing for that film.
Yeah, that was a really great point. And I love how that was up in Cincinnati. That scene was taking place pretty much in our backyard, which was a nice touch. The last thing that I have to say about this movie is I felt like the score didn't really add a whole lot. It really is not a bad listen to outside of the film itself, but it was done by Mark Isham, who's one of my favorite composers, actually. He did the movie Warrior, and he did the movie Miracle. So he's done quite a few sports films before, and he usually does a pretty good job. And I felt like this score is pretty basic for the most part, and it wasn't really all gung-ho. It kind of felt like they did it last minute, quite honestly. And so it really wasn't very fitting to the film. They added a lot more 1940s-ish, 1950s type sounds to it, though, mm-hmm. which I thought was a nice touch for the most part. But overall, I don't think it added a whole lot. And I felt like they could have taken a lot more of those elements and tried to enhance them or bring more emotion out of it. But I don't know. It was very laid back. It really wasn't all that inspiring to me in terms of the score either, which is a little bit disappointing because I like Mark Isham quite a lot.
Yeah, and given his repertoire, I'm looking just through his credits right now. He scored Bobby, one of my favorite movies. He scored The Freaking Mist, which is the score for that film is utterly out of this world. And then Warrior, as you mentioned too, like fantastic. And then he kind of gives us 42, which is, it's really run of the mill. It feels like any studio composer who just kind of came up to bat would, you know, give 42.
Yeah, he's trying a little too hard to make it inspirational when it's really not.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I feel like, you know, there was no credit until late in post-production. So without knowing the details, it just kind of feels like it was kind of last minute. And like you're saying, they were trying to amp it up as much as they could, but it just didn't really fit all that well. I think if you were to incorporate this into another film, it could work pretty well because musically I like it. It just doesn't fit this film at all. Before we move on, fellas, any last thoughts on the movie 42?
There are baseball sequences in this movie.
They're few and far between.
Yes, but I thought they were really well done. I really liked the way they were shot, especially when Jackie Robinson was on the base pass and he's kind of playing mind games.
Yeah, that scene was fantastic, actually.
Mind games with the pitchers. I really liked that. I thought that was really well done.
The only thing about that I didn't really care for that felt a little awkward to me, I do like that in terms of how it was shot and him playing the mind games. I felt like athletically he looked a little awkward to me. Like he wasn't very familiar with that kind of a sport or that game. I don't know anything about Chadwick Boseman or if he's athletic at all. I have no idea. But he felt a little awkward. And I don't know if that's because he was directed that way or if that's maybe how Jackie Robinson was back then or maybe that's how they played baseball back in the day. But to me, he just felt a little awkward with his movements and stuff. It was almost comedic. I felt like at some points there was actually people laughing at him at those movements in our theater, which I thought was kind of weird. But outside of that, though, I do agree with you. I do like those scenes and him stealing the bases and stuff like that was a lot of fun.
And there's something that kind of bothered me, and it's done in quite a few sports movies, is that, you know, some guys standing on third and him and the catcher are having just a normal conversation. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, like with all those people around, you're going to be able to hear him 90 feet away down on the base. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Once again, though, we always get to suspend our disbelief when we're watching movies, or otherwise we watch a documentary, and 42 already feels a little too much like that at points.
That's very true. All right, well, I gave the movie a grade of a C+. What did you guys give the grade?
C minus.
I'd give it a B plus. I'm generous, though.
He is feeling generous. All right. Well, next, we are going to talk about our favorite sports movies of all time. So stay tuned. You are listening to the In Session Film Podcast for Episode 8, and the music you are hearing in the background is from the movie Warrior and is one of my favorite songs from any sports movie ever, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit, as we are going to be now going over our top three sports movies of all time, which should be a lot of fun. So to get things started off, let's we'll kick it over to Nate. Nate, why don't you give us your number three sports movie or any honorable mentions that you may have.
All right, I'll start with my honorable mentions. I have Invincible, Rudy, Remember the Titans, Field of Dreams, and Little Giants. Those are my honorable mentions. But for my number three, I chose Space Jam. That's Matthew laughing. Not sure why.
It's Space Jam. I have to laugh.
I love this movie. I grew up watching it. Too much to count. I don't want to admit how much I actually watched it. Michael Jordan is one of my favorite. Well, he is my favorite basketball player of all time. And, you know, when you add him in with some of the greatest cartoon characters of all time, this has to be in my top three.
Hey, I personally like that pick. It's a great pick.
I don't think I've watched that since I was in third grade. So I really probably have nowhere to judge it.
It's a great movie. I like it.
I'll launch into my honorable mentions. I've got The Natural and Warrior as my honorable mentions. These are both films I absolutely love, but I just could not include them as my kind of top picks. Warrior as the tale of two brothers who end up fighting against each other in UFC fights, and absolutely just beautiful story in terms of the brother relationship and father-son relationships, and it really just transcends what often sports movies can feel like, albeit they're inspirational, but this one just had so much heart to it that it was ridiculous, and plus the music, as you heard leading in, that's part of what made the film so spectacular. The other one is The Natural. That's Barry Levinson's film from 1984, starring Robert Redford as this baseball player that just kind of shows up out of nowhere and just kind of busts on the scene, and he's
it's
absolutely
a great
amazing.
I do like it a lot.
Yeah, just this, you know, what becomes basically this this legend. And it's absolutely a fantastic film. The performances are incredible. And even though it's quite long from what I remember, about 2.5 hours, I don't remember it ever feeling boring or dragging or anything. And then, that's it for me.
And which one was your number three?
I'm sorry. And then launching into my number three, I've got Rocky. I'm going to have it my number three. I am a fan of boxing. I actually work at a boxing gym here in Lexington. And Rocky I saw when I was in high school for the first time. And I thought, it's Stallone. It's going to be really crappy. And I had never held him out to be an actor of much accord. But then when I watched and saw, wait, this dude wrote this and gives an incredible performance, a really emotional performance. And the film has the, you know, has the guts to go ahead and actually have him lose at the end, which you don't see sports movies do a ton. They do, but to actually still be inspirational after all of that, because you've just been rooting for him for so long, and you know that that was not actually what mattered in the end. It was actually that, one, he showed he could do it, and two, it was like he still gets Adrian in the end. I love it. Plus, it showcases my favorite sport, which is boxing. So that's my number three.
That is a really great choice, and I really enjoyed that movie a lot. I feel like somewhere down the road we need to do a Rocky series.
Dun, 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 dun.
So it's good stuff. Before I get into my number three, I had several honorable mentions as well. My list originally was about 10 long, but I had to cut that down. On my honorable mentions list, I also have Space Jam, as Nate mentioned. It's a really great movie. I feel like it holds up really well, too. I actually just watched it. I watched it probably 6 months ago or so, and I still loved it. It was absolutely fantastic. Another movie that I have on my list is the Sam Raimi film For Love of the Game, which stars Kevin Costner, and basically is a story about the washed up pitcher that pitches for the Detroit Tigers, which just happens to be my favorite team in Major League Baseball. And I really loved the movie. Yeah, I thought it was really, really great. John C. Reilly is also in that film, and maybe one of my favorite roles that he's ever played. Absolutely loved it. I also have the Gavin O'Connor film Miracle, which is about the 1980 U.S. hockey team that is coached by Herb Brooks, and he takes this. Basically, it's a story of a bunch of college players that go and gets the best hockey players in the world. And if you know the actual story, it's quite unbelievable. While the movie, I don't think, necessarily holds up as one of my favorites in terms of film, the story is one of my favorites of all time. And I thought they did a really great job of capturing that. I felt like it could have been done a little bit better, but for the most part, I really liked it. I love the score by Mark Isham. Kurt Russell does a nice job of Herb Brooks. And quite honestly, I don't think we'll never see another upset like this ever again. I mean, I can't quite put into words how big of an upset this is, other than the Russia team they beat hadn't lost in 20 years, and this was a bunch of 19 and 20-year-olds. I mean, the best comparison I can put it, and without exaggerating, this is like if you put a good high school football team together and them beating the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, it's really to that level. I mean, it was quite an accomplishment. And they also went on to win the gold, which was even more incredible. So, love the story. And I also have Friday Night Lights, which about a football team in Texas. It was probably one of my favorites also. But I already have a football movie in my top three, so I didn't want to have two of them necessarily. So, that being said, the sport that I have to go with for my number three is a sport that I actually don't really care about or watch a whole lot, and that is the movie Cool Runnings, which is based on a true story of the first Jamaican bobsled team to make it to the Winter Olympics. Awesome. And I love this film. It's entertaining and it's funny, and I love how they play off of each other. I thought the characters had great chemistry together. I just absolutely love how it came together. John Candy even fits into it really well. It has one of the best movie quotes of all time, you know, which is just, it's really awesome. And they had a lot of fun with the music, with bringing a lot of the Jamaican culture into the film. And I just really loved it a lot. And, I think it needs a rewatch. I'd love to watch it again, but it'll still hold up to me for sure. I absolutely love this film all around. So there's nothing about it that I don't think I don't like. So it was really great.
Apparently, I need to revisit my childhood and rewatch a lot of these movies.
Yeah, I know, right? I haven't seen Cool Runnings in forever. Now on to my number two, another childhood classic, The Sandlot. Just a great story about a new kid who moves to town, doesn't have any friends, but these guys who play baseball every day at the Sandlot kind of take them under their wing and teach them about friendship and life and whatnot. There's some great characters in this movie. I mean, you got Smalls, Benny,
yeah.
Ham, Yeah, Squints. Some great moments with these characters. I mean, like Squints kissing Wendy Peppercorn. You got the kids' attempts to try to get the ball from Mr. Myrtle's yard. The s'mores scene between Smalls and Ham. And then Benny finally getting the ball and being chased by the Beast. Just some great fun moments there. And it's just a really fun movie. Probably one of the best family movies of all time, I would say.
Yeah, I do have to really give it up for The Sandlot, because I still to this day quote it when someone's giving me a hard time. I always say, "You're killing me, Smalls."
I know, I do that all the time too. It's a great movie. Good pick.
Yeah. So my number two is Field of Dreams from 1989.
Yes, good movie.
Not even like, I like baseball, but I'm not like an uber baseball fan or something. But this is another one similar to Warrior, Rocky, that what it does is it just can transcend the sports genre. And it's a tale of Kevin Costner's character just hearing the voice that says build a baseball stadium in the middle of his cornfield. And the thing that I love about it is not the story. I mean, like the magical realism of the film is pretty cool, especially like I love James Earl Jones in the film and Burt Lancaster's characters,
yeah.
character. But the thing that I love about it is just, once again, the kind of the father-son dynamic in
yeah.
the film is absolutely tear-jerking. I don't think there's a man who can watch Field of Dreams and not lose it while watching it.
Yeah, it is a good movie. That is a great chemistry they have. It is fantastic.
I think it was, I watched for the first time probably when I was 20, 21 or so. I had never seen it, and everyone had talked it up, and I'm like, no way is it as good as everyone's saying it is. It was. It's highly recommended, and whether you like baseball or not at the time, I could have cared less about baseball, and yet it actually, one, got me interested in it, and two, was just a great film on its own.
Absolutely, and it made it on to the poll that we had on our website earlier this week, so it definitely is a classic. It's definitely one of the best, for sure. My number two is a football movie. This is my one football movie I had in my list. I don't know if you guys had any certain criteria when you guys were picking your list, but I try to keep one sport in my, only just one sport in my top three. So my football movie, and we've talked about this already, is Remember the Titans. And as we've talked about when we were doing the review of 42, I mean, it does a great job of capturing all of the racism and struggle of the time that it was in. And it does a great job of capturing how these young men, these high school students who are in the middle of all of this craziness that is going on around them. And they do a really great job of coming together. And, you know, whether it doesn't matter whether you're white or African-American, they do the chemistry and the camaraderie between the two of, or between the, you know, the two sides is just unbelievable. And the way they come together is just, it's just amazing to me. I love Denzel Washington in this movie. It's one of my favorite roles he has in film. And I also love Will Patton in this movie. I thought he was just as great as a coach playing Coach Yost. And I just, there's nothing about this movie I don't love. The music in it is great. I thought they did a great job of bringing in music and sounds from the 1970s. And all that was, it was absolutely terrific. I mean, there's nothing about this movie I feel like I could bring as a negative to it. I don't think I can have any negative criticism toward it at all. Other than it didn't last long enough. Like, I felt like I could have watched more and more of them. But there's one specific scene that I particularly love where they are losing. And this is probably in the first half of one of these games. And all of the refs are calling all these bogus calls on against the Titans. And they're just going crazy. And there's a lot of chaos on the sideline. And Coach Yost brings his defense together. The music just amps up perfectly. And he just directly into the camera as he's looking at his players says, "You do not let them get another inch the whole game." And I love how he delivers that line. And then they go out and just destroy this team regardless of what the refs are doing. It was just one of my favorite moments in film, or in sports film especially. So absolutely love that movie.
Yeah, it's an excellent movie. Okay, now for my number one. My favorite sports movie of all time is Warrior, and we've talked about this already a little bit, but I remember watching this on DVD for the first time, and about halfway through, I told the people I was watching, this is my favorite sports movie of all time, and, you know, we were only at the halfway mark. I just love the story. It's an unbelievable story, with the main theme being forgiveness. I love that. And then when you have great actors like Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton and Nick Nolte, I mean, it just adds so much to that. And then, you know, we played the song we were playing before this segment, about today by the National, plays over the final sequence in the movie. And it's just, it's an unbelievable sequence that you really, I mean, if that's the only sequence you watch in the whole movie, it's definitely worth it.
And you'll want to watch the rest of the movie if you see that. But the thing is, don't watch it because that's the best part of the movie and you want to save it for the end.
Yeah, I was just about to say, because you can find the last, you can find that clip on YouTube where you can watch the last 5 minutes. But I would, like Matthew, highly, highly recommend watching the whole thing up until that point. It's what makes that last part so great is because of the 2 hours before.
Yeah, it means so much more come that end in terms of just raw emotion that scene evokes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so for my number one is Friday Night Lights. It's been mentioned
good
here
pick.
Before, mm-hmm. And it was, I think, honestly, just in my history with film, sports films, it's the one that won me over. Then I actually said, I guess I am actually a sports movies fan. Like, I never thought I would admit that, but I was, and it was that movie that won me over. One of the biggest reasons it did was the Explosions in the Sky score for the film. I had always found most sports movie scores to be completely run-of-the-mill, really uninteresting, really just over-the-top and overdone. And this is the one that just said, oh, wait, this is a band I love, and they're doing this movie. Maybe I should pay a little more attention here. And the story, to me, is just absolutely incredible. Just this little high school, or this little town in Texas, and all they really have is their football team. And every character in that film is painted so, so fully. I mean, Booby Miles, one of my favorite characters in the film, as well as just, I think, in any sports movie. You feel for him, like, when he, I don't remember exactly what happens, but I know he gets injured.
I think he tears his ACL or screws up his knee is what happens.
And I know he's not able to play. And, like, oh, gosh, you feel that. And I'm not even someone who, like, in general, like, that's not a huge deal. I don't follow a ton of sports in general, but for me, like, you're feeling it because you've already gotten to know this character and he's already kind of a part of you as you're watching this.
He has that great scene in the car with his uncle where he kind of breaks down and he's wondering what he's going to do now.
Yeah, and that's exactly. And that's the thing is, once again, like, I think there's something about sports movies that just, you have to have raw emotion in it. And I think this kind of goes back to talking about 42 of why it didn't work was there wasn't that. And I don't know of a better movie to me than Friday Night Lights that at least for me conjured up that much emotion and connected with me on that level.
I like Friday Night Lights because, spoiler, but the team actually loses at the end.
They do. They pull the Rocky. And I actually like that. That's the thing. Like, I really respect films when they're able to do that, yet still be inspiring. And Friday Night Lights is because you saw what they went into it. I think one of the best things about the film is at the very end, they lose. And then there's just this little epigraph at the end that says, and then they won the next year.
Right.
Yeah, because that's not what it was about. It wasn't about them winning. It was about who the people were. It's about what they went through, not about the win at the end.
The only thing I have with Friday Night Lights movie is that the TV show is 100 times better.
Yeah, I need to watch it. You've already told me this, and so I'll get on it.
Which is crazy to think about because this movie is really great. And it's not surprising that it's your number one. In fact, I had a really hard time going back and forth between Remember the Titans and this movie. I mean, when Nate and I were talking about it earlier this week, he was asking me what my top three was, and I said, I don't know which football movie I'm going with yet because I really love this film a lot. And like you guys touched on, you know, losing at the end adds a nice touch because it's not about that. It, like you guys were saying, it's about the story and the characters, which is done so well. And it's also why I also loved Cool Runnings because of that same thing. And spoiler, if you haven't seen that movie, they don't win and they crash toward the end. And it's that scene where they're carrying the sled across the finish line is one of my favorites in sports as well. And especially with that movie being a comedy and that what carried that film up until that point, from then on through the rest of the movie, it was not a comedy. It was about these guys and having this touching moment, which was fantastic to me. So for my number one, I'm actually going to kind of cheat here, guys. So I'm sorry, but I have two number ones. And so I'm going to cheat a little bit. But for my first number one, and in no in particular order, I'm picking Warrior also, like Nate did. And this movie is, it's really touching to me personally. It has, it's just such a big part of my personal story. And it just means so much to me. I am not an MMA fan really a whole lot, and I'm not into, to fighting or anything like that. In fact, I went to a boxing lesson this week with Matthew for the first time. That was my first anything that has to do with any of that. But I love this film. I mean, everything about it is fantastic. Tom Hardy, I just fall in love with his character. Joel Edgerton, absolutely love his character. And I really feel for Nick Nolte. There's a lot that goes through his character and his personal experiences that I personally relate with. And it just absolutely draws me in. The score is unbelievable. And what Mark Isham does with the score, especially with the song About Today by The National, like Nate said, at the end is absolutely incredible. One of my favorite tracks from any score ever. I mean, it's just absolutely terrific. And everything comes together so well. The story is just so well written. And this was written and directed by Gavin O'Connor. He does both of them, and he does a terrific job of bringing such an emotional story to life. And to me, it was very, very touching. My number one, I feel like I could talk about this movie for days, but at one point I'll start to break down some. So I'll stop there. It's great. If you guys haven't seen it, go check it out. I actually got this as a gift for Christmas for my brother, and as soon as I opened it, I absolutely lost it. Just looking at the cover, I knew it was something that I looked forward to watching. And since I've got it on DVD, I've watched it twice. So absolutely love it. My other number one movie is a movie that I think is one of the most underrated movies of all time, especially when it comes to this specific category, and that is the movie Mystery Alaska, which is directed by Jay Roach. And was written by David Kelly. And this movie stars Russell Crowe, and I think it's one of his best movies that nobody talks about. He's absolutely terrific in this film. And it's kind of, I guess, kind of hidden, because right after this movie, he did Gladiator. And, you know, that movie won a lot of awards, and that's the one that people talk about. But this movie, to me, hit directly with me. And what I love about Mystery Alaska, if you don't know the story, is it's about a group of residents in this small town in Alaska called Mystery. And it's about this hockey team that they choose of the people of the town. And they have this Saturday game. And what, like, high school football is here in Kentucky or in Ohio or in Texas, like, people go to Friday football games for high school, like Friday Night Lights, as we talked about, like that's what small towns do. Well, in this town in Alaska, that's what these guys do. They have hockey, and it does a great job of having this small town feel. And me personally, who hockey is my favorite sport, is my number one growing up, and I'm from a small town. And people up north that play hockey, this is very realistic in terms of how they put this together and in terms of the culture for hockey and how they bring all of that together. And what I loved about this movie is, in a lot of sports movies, especially hockey movies, a lot of the sport itself tends to be fake and just really written. And in this movie, it was very realistic. I love the way they skated, the way they passed and did all of that stuff was very, very realistic.
Is it more realistic than the Mighty Ducks?
Oh, well, the Mighty Ducks is a joke when it comes to hockey. So I almost particularly don't even like those films, because I feel like they're making fun of hockey. And I guess I like it because it brings hockey to the forefront for America, or for the world in film anyway. But what I like about Mystery is the hockey is very, very realistic. And the story basically progresses where a guy from Mystery moves away to New York, writes a story that gets into the New York Times or some magazine, I can't remember. And the NHL takes notice, and they schedule this game between this Mystery team and the New York Rangers. And so the New York Rangers have to go to Mystery, and they're going to play on this pond that they play on. And it's really the story about them, about this town, and you know, them coming together to have this huge event. And it's just really, really well done. There's so many elements. It's not really just about hockey. It's about the story of the players on the team, how they connect to each other in these towns, and how they play off of each other. There's great chemistry. And it's just absolutely fantastic. But what really sets this movie apart for me is this clip that I'm going to play for you right now.
They want the Ranger players to go up to the North Pole and play pond hockey with a bunch of Eskimos. It's a big gimmick. I mean, Mr. Pruitt himself has brought one of his lumberjack players with him to help him further the exploitation.
Objection, Your Honor. That's not a very nice thing to say. Your Honor, we've already spent a lot of money on this game.
You can sue the league for restitution.
That's assuming that money damages could make us whole, but our reputation has been hurt.
Reputation? Price World tried to move up there. You opened fire. What reputation?
Could I be heard?
Go ahead.
We do have our pride. And sometimes it's a little too connected to how well we play hockey, but we do have our pride. And all of you and all the TV commentators have been going around saying that this is a farce, that this is all a big joke. Our town is a big joke.
Is there a legal argument coming?
It's estoppel. It's in my brief. What did you call? You called my friend something before. What did you call him?
A lumberjack.
That boy has a heart bigger than this whole courtroom. He plays to play. He skates to skate. He don't make $1 million a year. He loves the game of hockey. He loves it. Judge, you can't take this game away from us. You can't. It's not about money.
And I absolutely love how he delivers those lines. It brings a lot of emotion to me when I watch that. As someone who loves hockey, as someone who loves the game and skated to skate, I played to play. I didn't make $1 million playing hockey either. But I think anyone who loves sports, regardless of what the sport is, obviously here we're talking about hockey, it just, that line delivered right there is why I love this movie, because that's ultimately what it's about. And, you know, in that scene, you know, the New York Rangers are threatening to pull out of the game and they've spent a lot of money. And so they're looking to sue and all that sort of stuff. And it's just, it's such a touching thing to me, and I absolutely love it altogether. All of the actors in this movie do a phenomenal job. And that to me is, it might be my favorite sports scene in any film. And it just brings me to tears every time I watch it, 'cause I'm so passionate about the game and I love it and I love the film. And, it is easily why it's my number one. And I did get to watch that again this week. So, I absolutely, no doubt for me why it's my number one. So that and Warrior, I had a hard time picking between the two of them because of the emotions it brings out of me. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's definitely one of the most underrated films of all time. So that being said, any final thoughts before we move on to the next segment, fellas?
Just remembering a lot of childhood sports movies I saw. I earlier said I hadn't watched any, and then I remembered Mighty Ducks, Big Green, yes. Cool Running, Sandlot. So I'm going to have to revisit all of these.
Absolutely. Nate, any final thoughts?
Nah, just kind of like what Matthew was saying. There are a lot of good movies here that I haven't seen in a really long time that I'd like to watch again soon.
Yeah, it's really great because most of our movies came from the 90s or early 2000s, I think. So fantastic. All right, well, we're going to move on. Our next segment is going to be a new segment that we're doing, and I'm really looking forward to it. So stay tuned.
Love is in the air. Everywhere I look around, love is in the air, every sight and every sound.
You're listening to In Session Film, and we have a new segment that we are going to be doing where we're going to be going over different directors, composers, and a new segment called In Session Movie Series. And our first series that we're going to be doing is Baz Luhrmann, who's a director that neither of us have really been totally familiar with. So we are going to be doing four different movies of his, and the first one that we are going to be doing this week is the movie Strictly Ballroom, which is Baz Luhrmann's 1992 film, which he written and directed. What did you guys think of Strictly Ballroom?
I thought it was fantastic, and I know I am completely in the minority here.
Yes, you are.
I mean, I'm looking. It got a 7.0 on IMDb, so obviously I'm not the only one, so I don't feel too bad about this. From the moment it opened, I was laughing. It plays very much like a Christopher Guest film in the vein of Spinal Tap or Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, kind of a mockumentary style. And already when I, because at first I didn't realize that's what it was doing, but then when I realized it, it was, oh, shoot, I know what he's doing. He's trying to be funny. And it works some of the time being funny, and a lot of times it doesn't. And I think that's part of why I was laughing, was because sometimes it does fall flat on its face. But I enjoyed it. I thought the characters were actually fairly well painted, even though the story is, I mean, it's a guy who wants to be a rebel and do things on his own and, you know, doesn't want to conform to this and does his own thing and ends up winning with it, which is awesome. The story is not what I liked, but it was the performances. It was the style that Baz Luhrmann approached, and I think that's the thing that marks, albeit I've not seen a ton of Baz Luhrmann's films, but at least from what I remember from Moulin Rouge and the little bit I've seen of Romeo and Juliet, he's about style. He's not a substance kind of guy. From the look of Gary Gatsby, it looks like it's going to be that exactly. I'm hoping for some substance in it, but the thing is, he does that well. And in this, I mean, you're looking at something like Ballroom Dancing. What is it about? It's about appearances. It's about looking good. It's about doing the right thing and doing it at the right time. And I thought he did that fantastically with it. The costuming was ridiculous in it. I loved it. It's part of what pushed it kind of over the top for me. The music, like, I loved that there was this really cheesy cover version of the Cyndi Lauper song that's played in Romeo and Michelle. I can't remember what it's called, but time after time. They play that, like, over and over throughout the film, so it's almost exasperating, but it works really well because the kind of the play on time after time that it's happening. The entire film is really a comedy, albeit it doesn't always live up to that potential. I really walked away loving it, and it was mostly just about the way it looked. And for a first film, too, from a guy from Australia, back when you know, international films really didn't get the acclaim, I thought he did an excellent job, and this makes sense why he got pushed to the forefront so early.
Well, I'm on the complete opposite spectrum of you. I hated this movie. I thought it was terrible. It was so bad. It was so awful. I mean, the movie's only like an hour and 30 minutes, and yet I can only watch 10 minutes of the time because it was just pure torture. I mean, forget waterboarding. Just show the terrorists this movie, and they'll tell you whatever you want to know.
Wow.
Just everything about it was bad. Seriously, one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
But what would you rank it with as worst movies? That I'd like to know, like, where does this fall with your worst movies?
Well, I also hated Napoleon Dynamite.
Fair.
But Strictly Ballroom is way worse than that.
Okay.
Wow, that's...
That's a little sad.
I knew he
But then again,
like
I actually love Napoleon Dynamite, so...
Yeah, so did I. So, I knew Nate didn't like it. I didn't know he hated it to the point where he would substitute waterboarding for this film.
Can I just get you to elaborate a little bit? Because what was the specifics of why you hated it? I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure that out.
I mean, it was just stupid. I mean, the story. I mean, the completely unnecessary documentary style interviews.
Have you ever seen Christopher Guest movies?
No, and if this is
okay, so apparently this
like
is just
that,
not your
I,
this is just not your
see,
style. Then okay,
probably Monkey. Not. And I'm sure the ballroom dancing didn't help because it just reminded me of Dancing with the Stars.
I got it. Because see, mockumentaries are one of my favorite types of films.
See, I didn't mind that either. So is it just the subject material that you didn't like, or is it just everything all encompassing?
It was everything. I mean, usually there's at least one thing I can like about a movie, but there's nothing in this.
Between you two, I didn't necessarily love it, but I didn't hate it either. This movie actually got a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes, so a lot of people actually liked it quite a bit. So, and I guess what I liked about it was there's a few shots that I do like. The main character, Scott Hastings, about 20 minutes into the movie, after they set up the whole dancing and the game thing that they're on or whatever you want to call it. They set up all that. And then Scott Hastings, the main character, finds himself where he's kind of in this room by himself and he's working on his own dance routines. It's different than everybody else. It's different than what, you know, what status quo is and what the dancing should be. And he's trying to separate himself and do his own thing. And I, what I love about it is it's him becoming himself and becoming who he is, and he's trying to figure that out. He's trying to figure out who he wants to be, how he wants to dance, and he wants to be his own person, where his mom and his dad and everyone else is trying to tell him who he's supposed to be. And I guess that's what I like about that particular scene. There's another scene toward the end of the movie where him and this girl Fran that he's throughout the movie, he's secretly kind of dancing with, and but his parents are still trying to set him up with other people, and they're kind of having this dance by themselves, kind of off in this other room while all this dancing's going on in this main room. And I love that too. It's them wanting to be together while everyone else is kind of, you know, hating against them and rooting for other things, but they're trying to do their own thing. And I guess that's what I loved about it. The movie is really what I got out of it was, you know, it's the power of potential. It's, you know, what can someone do when they, you know, stick to their guns and they try to do their own thing and they're motivated and they're just trying to become, you know, who they want to be. And I guess that's what I got away from it. I didn't really care for tons of the dancing myself or the crazy costumes that was in this movie.
They were fabulous.
They were fabulous. But, you know, I liked the kind of the documentary type shooting that it had, especially toward the beginning. You know, I particularly enjoyed that. I guess I had a hard time with it because I didn't really care about the subject material. There was a lot of quick edits that kind of distracted me a little bit. But
there were some really bad edits in the film,
yeah,
to be honest.
And so that kind of was a little bit distracting to me. But, I mean, overall, I mean, I guess it was definitely a different style that I'm not really used to seeing. So, but I'm really curious to see how Baz Luhrmann takes that kind of style into some of these other films that we're going to end up, you know, reviewing. But, you know, overall, I guess it wasn't my favorite, but, you know, it was okay.
Yeah, and I think we're ignoring probably the best aspect of the film. Everyone had an Australian accent.
That's very true. They did.
So,
and Nate still hated that.
Yeah, I just racist. But yeah, beyond that, I think part of the reason I also really loved it is I did a little background reading on Baz Luhrmann, and his parents were ballroom dancers, and he grew up around that, and I imagine doing
Which
a lot himself.
Sense.
So this was a project very dear to his heart, but also the idea you were talking about, JD, of just getting to be yourself. Baz Luhrmann's done that. He is a director who is not he has defied conventions. He's not been held to this box of being put in. I think that's why, like, I was looking at the space between all of his movies, and I'm like, he has at least 5 years between pretty much every film he's ever made. And I think that's because he wants to do it his way. He wants to do it to his perfection. And that's what I've seen, albeit I've not seen a lot of his movies. But you can tell that, like, Moulin Rouge is not a movie that a studio would just churn out. It just doesn't, it just doesn't not like that at all. Gatsby, even on, on that same point, without Luhrmann at the helm, I don't think a studio could just turn a film out like that, at least not with the look that, that it looks like it has. So so I love this because it felt like it's a start. It was an independent film. It was his first one. You know, I tend to be a lot more forgiving on first films, and I thought he did a great job.
You know, and even, you know, there was a lot of films that we saw last year that were, you know, people's first film. You know, we really loved...
Beasts of the Southern Wild?
Beasts of the Southern Wild. That was another good one. So, I mean, there was a lot of independent films from last year that I liked, where we saw Safety Not Guaranteed, Perks of Being a Wallflower, and those were really great films. So I kind of understand where you're coming from with that, Matthew, where, you know, and a lot of people did like this movie. You know, it didn't get a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes for no reason. Or like you said, it was rated 7 out of 10 stars on IMDb. So I don't know. Maybe it could be. Maybe it's a little outdated. I don't know. But it was okay. I really didn't hate the film at all, and I've been trying to think of some things about it that I did like, and overall, I liked the story elements to it. And what did you think, since Nate doesn't really like it, I'll ask you, Matthew, what did you think about the plot twist at the end with the story with his dad?
Yeah, I kind of saw that coming, unfortunately, but then again, I think I'm the jaded movie viewer who's seen everything. But I liked the way it worked out, like the way the plot twist worked. I mean, I knew the father being this really kind of passive guy with this really overbearing wife who's, really forcing her son into all of this. I kind of saw that, and then with him, actually being the one who was duped, I saw that kind of coming, but wasn't sure. But I just loved how the father rose up at the end. I didn't see that coming. I just kind of thought he'd still kind of stay in the corner and back. I loved that, that aspect of it. But I also wanted to mention, you talked about the film being outdated. It's a film that knows it was made in the 90s.
Sure, like, absolutely.
Everything about it screams that, because you can see it. It's like, it's almost like the 80s hit Australia in the early 90s.
Pretty much what it looks like.
Is the way it feels. And I love it, actually, for that reason, because I don't know, I like kitschy, I like kind of tacky movies like that. And the thing is, I think that's how Luhrmann already was kind of trying to brand himself with that, is I have this particular weird flair to the movies. Like, I love the flashback sequence about his father dancing. And it's way over the top, like even over the top than the rest of the film is. My favorite things, it annoyed the crap out of me actually when I first saw it, but was during the dance sequences, there are sound effects for like when someone will dip or someone will turn fast. And I'm just like,
it was almost cartoonish a little bit.
It is cartoony. And the thing that I love about that is actually what it kind of felt like was like, because of the mockumentary style, it's like this is a kind of a sports movie and you're trying to highlight those aspects of it. And it played it up really well because of that. Like, where at first it was an annoyance, it actually became something that worked with the entire style of the film, because I noticed it wasn't just once. He did it all the way throughout the film.
Sure.
And because of that consistency, it actually just went with the entire tone of the film the entire way through.
Yeah, that's a great point. I would say my favorite part of the film is the element that we were just talking about a little bit with his dad, and especially with his mom trying to control his whole life. Like, I mean, I've known people who's experienced that, where their parents try to control everything, and how a struggle that can be for some people. And some people may like that, but I personally like the idea of, his mom's trying to control everything, and she's kind of being this over the top, very dramatic mother. And, I can't wait for you to be with this person and yada, yada, yada. And, the whole time he's just wanting to set his own path. And I love how that comes to the forefront at the end. And especially with the way his father kind of draws that out into the open with everything that happens there at the end. And that last sequence, with them doing the dance. I love how they had, the camera set up there. Just kind of going with them through the motions and stuff. That part I really did like a lot, actually. So I know. So I'm kind of in the middle of all three of you guys. What kind of grade would you give it?
I'd rate it an A minus.
F.
Well, of course they would say that. I'd give it a B minus. And maybe that would be a different grade. Maybe if I would have saw it in the 90s, I think the outdatedness and the cartoonish of it, I think, brought it down a little bit for me. And I didn't really care for the subject material. But outside of that, I tried to look back from that because that's not what I wanted to grade it on. It was just on the film itself.
Yeah, and just one last comment. I mean, talking about that, independent films just started making their rise in the early 90s. The 80s saw a few, but none that were particularly prominent. So the thing is, this was on that new wave of independent movies. So this was things that critics had really never seen or paid attention to before. So this was a big deal. And especially coming from a foreign country, this was a really big deal for a film. So I think, because that was the lens, because I knew the history of this film, and that's the lens I watched it in, and that helped me actually like it. So Nate, if you ever decide to... revisit this film, which I don't think is probably going to ever happen.
I don't think
but
that's ever
if you
going
ever
to
choose,
happen.
That lens helped a lot.
Well, we'll have this review up on our website. We have a brand new section on the website that'll be entitled In Session Movies, and it'll be under our podcast section under movie series, and we'll have this up there for you guys to go and check out, and we'll be doing... Romeo and Juliet next, and then we're also going to do Moulin Rouge and Australia. That'll lead up to the weekend of The Great Gatsby. So it'll be pretty exciting for our first in-session movie series, and we're looking forward to that. So we'll move on to the next series. We got some fun trailers to talk about in our news section, so stay tuned. Come back. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 8, and the next thing that we are going to be talking about now is some news that we got to see over the last week. There were some fun new trailers that came out that we wanted to talk about real quick. And one of those was Matt Damon's new movie, Elysium, is coming out. And what did you guys think of the new trailer for Elysium?
Loved it. Super excited about it. It's by Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9. And this, based on the trailer, Elysium seems to have the same feel and style of that movie. I love the technology in it. I love the look of Elysium, although it looks very similar to like something you'd see in Halo or Mass Effect. And then the weapons, they kind of have that real feel to them, like District 9. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm on the other end of the spectrum, just like with Strictly Ballroom. I thought this looked really run of the mill and meh. Like I was excited when I saw the poster for it.
Poster is
Matt Damon's
sweet.
In it, like Neil Blomkamp's back on this, like, and I loved District 9. I thought it was a fantastic movie.
Good.
I just looked at it and I'm like, this looks really similar to a lot of sci-fi movies I've been seeing of late. I felt like echoings of In Time felt like in there because of the rich versus the poor again, and then kind of the two worlds living in. Felt really dang similar there. District 9 almost, it's the exact same story there too. So it just felt like a rehashing already just in the trailer. I already felt like a rehashing. I'm hoping it's not going to be, but it already got that feeling as far as like the look of it. Nothing seemed fresh to me. Like we've seen a lot of those desolate landscapes in the films, all the garbage and stuff like that. And then this paradise, I don't know. It just, everything felt recycled to me about it. And even Matt Damon, I'm just, I normally will get excited about Matt Damon in a movie. I think he's a really great actor. There was nothing to really pull me into it except Neil Blomkamp's name, and that's about the only reason I think I'm going to see it.
I'm on your side, Nate. I'm really excited for this. I thought it looked really great, so I think it's got a decent cast in it, too, that I'm really looking forward to, including your boy William Fichtner that we talked about last week. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it looks really cool. It's set in the year 2154, and I love how there's two different parts of Earth, the very, very wealthy, and then this just desolate landscape that's gone to hell. So, but it looks like it should be a pretty good movie, in my opinion. I think it's going to be fun. And I haven't seen a Jodie Foster movie in a little while, so I'll be looking.
She was in Carnage recently, and excellent in that.
And I've heard that's good. I actually haven't got a chance to see it. It's on my list of movies that I want to see soon. So, there was another trailer that came out called Rush. What did you guys think of the trailer for Rush?
I was not honestly particularly impressed. I think part of it is Chris Hemsworth's accent in it, because I know it's not his actual accent, and it's not him doing an American accent either, and I hate that something that small derailed me already, but things like that can do that in movies. If I'm going to look past that, it might actually be an entertaining movie. Looks Days of Thunder-esque, and that could be, you know, it could be good. But then when I saw directed by Ron Howard, I'm like, ooh, beware. Ron Howard for me is not a seal of, like, a stamp of approval for me. It's a, this might be good, so be wary. But it might also suck. And because I've seen every Ron Howard film ever made. And my kind of consensus with his films is he makes about three different types of movies. He makes comedies that are pretty good. He makes dramas that are fantastic, and then he makes weird, crazy stuff that doesn't make any sense, like Willow or The Missing. And I don't know where Rush is falling into that, because it looked almost like between the drama and the weird category for me. And I don't know why it felt weird. Maybe just because Chris Hemsworth has a weird accent. But I think I've enjoyed it more if I had not seen Ron Howard's name attached to it.
Overall, I really didn't care for the trailer. I'm not a huge racing fan, so that might have something to do with it. But I did like the way it looked. That it appears it's going to have a lot of nice visuals in it, and it's kind of shot like 70s-esque. So.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of takes place in the 70s, I believe. So, I mean, it's based off of a true story. I guess to me, it just really depends on how they film it, because based off of the trailers, it looks very cliche. Like you've seen in lots of sports movies, one guy gets taken out for some reason, comes back, then there's a final duel at the end. You know, that's kind of the feel that I got from it. And I don't necessarily care for the sport itself either, like you, but I'm trying to look at it objectively and not trying to judge it based off of that. But and I'm kind of like what you were, Matthew, what you were saying. Like, I'm kind of in the middle with Ron Howard. So, I mean, he's done a lot of great movies, but he's done a lot also that I just really could care less for. So,
and honestly, the one thing it really made me think of was, for all you know, real film nerds out there, was David Cronenberg's 1979 film Fast Company, which is a real offshoot for him, nothing like his other movies. The look of it is almost identical to it. Like Ron Howard's just trying to mimic that. And I think that's also the thing that said, this doesn't even look like an original movie.
Sure. I like some of the cast in it. I mean, I've really liked what Chris Hemsworth has done, you know, with some of his stuff. But I don't know. I'm very much on the fence of it, and I'm not exactly sure. It just looks very cliche and something that I've seen a million times. So I'm not exactly too excited for it, but hopefully the visuals will kind of overtake it. Hopefully the screenplay is a little bit better than what I'm assuming it's going to be, but we shall see. The last trailer that we are going to talk about is a movie that I'm really looking forward to, and that is the movie Only God Forgives, which stars Ryan Gosling and looks very Drive-esque. So what did you guys think of Only God Forgives?
Loved it. Really, like you said, I'm really looking forward to this one. And, you know, I just love the visuals in the trailer. And I love that the last line of the trailer is Gosling saying, "Want to fight?" It's his only line in the trailer, and I really like that.
Yeah, I love the I think three or four films I've seen of Nicholas Winding Refn. Like, his he has such a flair for just shooting a film while also still having substance in terms of a story.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is the trailer is all about the style. Like, that's what got me into Drive in the first place, was the style and the look of it. And I remember Nate early in the week commenting, like, he said, it looks like Drive Part 2.
Yeah.
Because
it really does.
It has that exact same feel to it, except it looks almost grittier, which I didn't even realize that would be possible, to be grittier and more violent and more brutal than Drive. But it looks like Only God Forgives, especially with a freaking title like that. Like, that just blew my mind. I'm like, oh, this is going to be intense. Like, oh, wow. And I highly recommend those of you who are of age or not and find a way around it, watch the Red Band trailer, because it is absolutely worth it.
It does look really good. And I love how it's shot in similar in terms of Drive. And it almost looks like it's the characters are going to be very much the same, too. And I know, like, he's kind of gotten some criticism for that, but I feel like that's how he was directed to act like that in Drive, and I felt like he did a really great job with it. I actually loved his character there, and this looks very similar, if not the same, and which makes me look excited for. And I love how they had all these visuals and stuff, and then there was the only one line, as you mentioned, Nate, that he has at the end. I thought they just really made a great ending to that trailer. It looks very, very good. Since we're kind of running out of time, we'll go ahead and move on to our next segment, where we'll talk about some movies that we saw this week. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast, and now we are going to be talking about some movies that we've seen this week. And that music that you just listened to is from a movie called The Eagle, which was scored by Atli Ovarsson, who is a very good composer. I actually enjoy his work quite a lot, and especially that one. So let's talk about some movies we saw this week. I know, Matthew, you didn't really see anything outside of Strictly Ballroom and 42, which we've already talked about.
Yep, busy week.
Nathaniel, what did you get to see this week?
Well, last week I mentioned that I saw 3/4 of the Footloose remake and half of Pretty in Pink. Well, I finished Footloose. I saw the last...
Way to go.
20 minutes.
20 minutes. You realize that makes it an 80-minute film. Is it really that short?
Maybe.
Nice.
I actually really liked it. I think it compares pretty well to the original, and I had a pretty good time with it. I saw it finish the second half of Pretty in Pink, so hopefully I'll get to that next week.
Next week.
So outside of the two movies we reviewed, you only saw a fourth of another film. Very good. So that's a fourth more than Matthew.
Exactly. So you're still better than me. Here's a quarter.
There you go. All right. Well, I guess I'll have to carry this segment since I watched a lot of movies this week. I got to see Mystery Alaska. I won't go into it a whole lot since we've already talked about it a lot already. But I will say Go See It is very good. Watched a movie called Broken City, and I actually really enjoyed this a lot. The one thing I got out of it is... Russell Crowe is not very good as a bad guy. He does a very good job as a good guy, but as a bad guy, not so much. So I've gone back and forth about his performance in Les Mis. And here, once again, as another bad guy, he gives a so-so performance, probably not his best by any means. Although I am falling more and more in love with Mark Wahlberg. So I think he does.
Every man is.
So he does a great job as Billy Taggart in this movie. Catherine Zeta-Jones is also very good in it as well. This movie is very, very plot-driven. It was written by Brian Tucker. And this script, I was reading something about it earlier this week. It was at one point, it was one of the hottest scripts in Hollywood that people were really barking for and trying to get a hold of. And Alan Hughes ended up getting the nod to direct this film. And overall, I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it was very plot-driven. There's a lot of twists and turns. You really have to pay attention to it to really follow the story, as there's a lot of elements that are going on. There's a lot of corruption that is going on and a lot of going back and forth on who's the good guy and who's the bad guy and what's going on here. But I think that part of it is what I like the most, because at the end, it really comes full circle. And so while you have to pay attention to it at the end, it is actually done really, really well. I don't think it's necessarily anything that we haven't seen before. I think we've seen a lot of cliche type drama stories like this before, but I thought it was directed really well. And I thought he did a great job of getting good performances outside Russell Crowe. And I felt like he brought the story to the forefront really well. So, and you know, it's a revenge story about being double crossed. So, I mean, we've seen it before, but it's worth seeing.
Is it better than the trailer would indicate? 'Cause I saw the trailer and I thought it was just ho-hum.
Yes, I think it's a lot better than what the trailer would indicate. I think the trailer, I don't know, it doesn't do it a good service. I mean, there's a lot more to it than what the trailer I think what they were trying to do with the marketing is give enough to try to entice you, but they didn't want to give too much away. And by doing that, I think it might have hurt the film in terms of marketing. But I feel like if they would have gone further than that, they would have given too much away, because it is very, very plot driven, very, very into the story.
Yeah. And I want to comment on two things. Albeit I haven't seen it, but Russell Crowe, I really loved him actually as a villain in Les Mis, and I know a lot of people did not like him in it. I thought he did an excellent. I thought he did an excellent performance in that, and so I'd be curious to see if I do like him in another film as a villain here. The other thing is, as a general rule, I love Hughes Brothers movies. I liked From Hell quite well. I love The Book of Eli. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
And so, actually, that was the only reason, besides, I guess, Mark Wahlberg, because I tend to just like him in movies, but that I'd actually wanted to go into this movie in the first place was knowing it was Hughes Brothers, although it looks like just Alan Hughes maybe this time.
It is.
But still, you know, they're quality. And so I just, I knew that from the start. And so it's a film that I do intend on watching at some point.
Yeah, while I don't think it's up to the level of Spring Breakers or even Dead Man Down, I still think it's one of the most underrated films that's come out this year. It's very good, and it's definitely worth seeing. So I'd be interested to see how much more work Brian Tucker gets. This was his first screenplay he's ever written, and like I said, it was a hot commodity at one time. So he seems like he's got a good future ahead of him if he's able to keep coming out with these kinds of stories. So so while it's the theme of it is something we've seen before, this is done a little bit differently, and I did enjoy it a lot. So the next movie that I got to see, as I mentioned in the opening, I got to see The Eagle, which is a Kevin MacDonald film and was written by Jeremy Brock, and it's based off of a book. And this movie stars Channing Tatum before Channing Tatum was Channing Tatum. And
Channing Tatum was always Channing Tatum.
And it also stars Jamie Bell. This movie is pretty boring for the most part. It's not really well shot. It's very cliche in lots of places. It gets very dull. Like, the whole story is about him as a young Roman soldier, and he's trying to honor his father's memory by finding this legion's golden emblem or whatever that was part of the Roman army and part of the Roman culture that his father lost, and a lot of people looked down on him because of that. But I feel like there could have been a story there. It just wasn't told very well. And while it's supposed to be about this eagle that they're supposed to find, this golden eagle, you don't really know what it is, and they don't really go into why it's important. I mean, they briefly go into it, but the story is more about Channing Tatum's character and honoring his father. And now he's partnered up with this young Brit who has to go into British territory to now find this. And I don't know, it just didn't really come together very well. And even the action scenes I thought were kind of boring and dull. Easily easily the best part of this movie is the score, hands down. Like, the only reason I actually watched it is because I've listened to the score a lot, and I love that ending title song that we played as we opened this segment. I absolutely love that, and the whole score is actually phenomenal. The soundtrack's really great, and I've listened to it for a long time, but I've never seen the movie, so I figured, well, what the heck, I might as well watch it and see what it's all about. So didn't really care for it a whole lot.
Yeah, the film meanders. It's really overly long, even though it's still shy of 2 hours. It really has no story to it. Channing Tatum was the absolute terrible casting choice for this. And even Jamie Bell, who's normally a very dependable actor, just it really falls apart. I remember it was like one of the only movies in 2011 that I had wanted to see like pre-Oscar season, but I never caught it in theaters. And so I remember when it came out on DVD finally, like the next summer, I watched it and I'm just like, was really excited for it. And then what I got, it's a real letdown, and it's really sad because it could have been awesome. And I'm not really knocking like Channing Tatum's performance. It's not that he doesn't try or doesn't do a good job. It's just he was the wrong person with the wrong script and a lot of just wrong elements going into one movie as a whole.
Absolutely. The next movie I saw was Drive, which stars Ryan Gosling. And I'm not going to go too much into this because I think we're going to end up doing a Ryan Gosling series later in the year, as he has a couple more movies coming out this year. And with Place Beyond the Pines now in theaters now, I think we're going to see that. And we're going to end up doing this movie in that series later. So I'm not going to go into it a whole lot other than it was a great rewatch. And I really love this movie. And I think Gosling is terrific in it, despite what critics may say. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, Drive was one of 2011's best films, so please go and watch it.
Yeah, very good. We'll definitely have a full review on that sometime later this summer. The last movie I got to see outside of 42, obviously, was Saints and Soldiers Airborne Creed. And this very much felt like a TV movie, but I actually liked it. It was, at least I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I went into it thinking, this is going to be just a very cliche, very dumb World War II movie. And this movie is not really about the war at all. It's really about these four airmen that kind of get lost in the drop over Normandy. And they kind of group up, and it just becomes this really great story of them coming together, just the four of them. And they go through these different areas, and they're meeting up Germans and getting through them. What I particularly liked is they end up coming across this this French woman who was actually a soldier, and some of her comrades were taken hostage, and now she's taken these group of guys, and they're going to go and save her French friends. And there is a really great story element between Emily, who is the French soldier, and Curtis, who was one of the American soldiers, and they have a great chemistry together that is actually really well written. It's done really, really well, and I absolutely love it. There's one scene in particular where they're doing a shooting contest, and they make a bet that if Curtis wins the shooting, then she has to give him a kiss, and if she won, she was going to take a knife or something like that. And as the story goes, not to spoil anything, but I mean, it's not really a story worth spoiling. But anyway, she wins, and she still gives him a kiss anyway. And the smile he has afterwards is just really funny to me. And it actually was done very well, and I really liked how they shot that scene. It was very fun. So,
I'm gonna say, JD, are you aware that's a sequel?
Yes, film? It is. Okay. I'm aware of that. Yes.
Did you see the original?
See the original. No.
Okay, I just wanted to see it compared.
And I know this didn't do very well critically, but I really liked it. And I think what I liked about it was just the chemistry between these guys. And I thought that part was well written. I mean, the action is actually pretty good considering it probably didn't have a big budget. And I think they kept it small on purpose because it's not Saving Private Ryan. They don't have that budget. So they kept it to a story, and I felt like the story was really well done. I actually really enjoyed it a lot. So it's definitely worth seeing at least once. Maybe not a DVD buy, but it's worth seeing once. So, but that's all I have for this week. So Anything else, fellas, before we get out of here today?
Really looking forward to Oblivion next week.
Yeah, Oblivion is going to be a lot of fun. Nate, you have any final thoughts?
No, just looking forward to finally getting into some of these good movies like Oblivion, Pain and Gain, Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, which that movie is just a few weeks away too, right? May 3rd. So, yeah, so we're getting into some fun territory, which I'm really looking forward to. So, before we get out of here, one thing I want to mention is with Oblivion coming out this week, we're actually going to have a Facebook contest where we're going to give away a pair of free tickets for you to go and see Oblivion and have some money for some food and concessions. So be sure and go and check that out. We'll probably have that up tomorrow. Be sure to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/InSessionFilm. Follow us on Twitter at InSessionFilm. We're also on Google Plus and YouTube, so be sure to go follow us on there. And we're going to have, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to have all of these segments. We'll have the top three list under our podcast section. Also, we'll have the InSession movie series under our podcast section on our website too. So be sure to go and check out all of that. And we'll have the full podcast up on iTunes and up on our website as well. So we'll get out of here. So
this is Matthew Mason.
Nate Pars.
And I'm JD Duran. Everyone have a fantastic week and go see Oblivion. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bango bongo, it's time podcast time.
These are my friends. It's a little sad, but I love them.
Nate's hearing himself in his ears for the first time since we've been doing this, and he don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever actually heard himself speak before.
I know, it's kind of trippy.
Okay, maybe we should start the show now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, come on. Do it.